This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Dennis Quinn,
Roger Munn,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Dennis, you were talking about your time as an architect, and you came to Palmerston North in 1979. What was it that brought you here?
I'd been working in Wellington for 3 years when practice I was working for asked me to join the partnership and come to Palmerston North to take over from the partner who was here, who was moving away. I arrived. Wasn't my first place of choice. Having lived in Whanganui, I knew of Palmerston, particularly at the time the reputation for not so good weather, which I think has been put to rest in my time here. The weather's not as bad as people think it was. So, I came to Palmerston North.
Yeah. Were there any... the weather was a factor? What were the other aspects of the image of Palmerston North?
No, just that.
Just the weather.
Just that. It was...
To Wellington?
Well, that was the thing. I was working on some interesting projects in Wellington, so the decision to come wasn't easy because I was relinquishing projects that I had started and the opportunity for larger projects than would normally be available in Palmerston North. But some of the reasons were, one, my parents lived in Whanganui, as did my wife's parents. So it meant we were closer to them and would see them more often. And the other thing was that I knew that a smaller city was a good place to bring up children.
So the move was quite easy and comfortable?
The move was easy. We had come through the previous few weeks to arriving with looking at places, and I was heartened to find that there were houses for sale here at a price which was similar to what we had bought our first house for in Wellington. So it meant that we could come here and there would be no adjustment financially in terms of selling and buying.
Yeah.
How many children did you have at that stage, Dennis?
We had two, and our daughter was born the first year we were here.
Right.
And the sort of work that you had when you got here?
Fortunately, we did a lot of work at Massey University. So in coming here, I was immediately involved in work at Massey University. Also, we were just finishing off what was then called the Manawatu Youth Institute, which people would now know as Manawatu Prison. That was an interesting project, but sadly its original purpose has been somewhat subjugated by the needs for medium security prison, because the initial institution was for first-time offenders with a high chance of rehabilitation. And so it was the first of its kind, but few people would know that now. It's just become a medium security prison since. And the other project that was just being finished off was the telephone exchange.
There was a lot of debate about that.
The interesting thing about that was that the post office took so long to decide to actually build that building. The original design work started in 1966, and the building was finished in 1979. By the time the building was finished, all of the equipment could have been fitted into a double garage because technology had changed so much.
Amazing.
But what many people don't understand was that it had to be where it was because it was what you call the centre of the copper network, which was how all the wiring for telephones was done then.
Nationally?
No, in Palmerston North.
Okay.
Right, all the copper cables were all coming to that location.
Well, the original telephone exchange near there, Dennis, was
right next door.
Oh, right next door.
People don't seem to understand that either, that it was right next door.
Mm.
The other thing that people don't understand is that floor to floor in that building is 4.6 metres, which effectively is a story and a half. So what looks initially as a six-story building, in fact, is a nine-story building. And one of the biggest critics was former MP Trevor Declean, but he spoke out of ignorance when he made his comments because he had no idea. Most people don't realise the requirements. One of the other ones that's important is the top of the tower of that building, where you see the microwave structure, is exactly the same height as the tower on the top of Somerset Hill, Summer Hill Drive.
Mm.
So it had to be that height. And so that's why the building is so high. The other thing, too, is that...
When you say height from the ground or actual...
Actual height, a relative height. In other words, above sea level.
Yes,
right.
Okay.
The other aspect to that, too, is that that tower had the requirement that it should not deviate something in terms of millimetres under a certain strength earthquake and under certain force winds, so that it meant it had to be a very rigid, strong structure.
Does that make you more vulnerable to this?
No, it doesn't, but it's another design issue because...
Yeah.
Many buildings are designed to actually have some movement in an earthquake, but in this case, it
had to
be the other way.
We've had a few big shakes since that building's gone up. Did it meet the requirements?
I don't know, Roger. I think, in fact, probably the parameters have changed with technology as well.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Okay. Now, you say the equipment only needed a small amount of space. Is a lot of the building empty?
I can't answer that.
No.
I can't answer that. It had very few people in it anyway, because so many of those floors were simply equipment which required a technician or two to be on hand to ensure things. I went, the top floor was a staff cafeteria. There were, for the building, there were still a number of people there, but compared to an office building, the density was low. And as to its purpose and use now, I can't answer.
Okay. So were you mainly involved in large projects such as Massey University?
No. In fact, I think one of the best things about my work here in Palmerston North was I literally did everything from kitchen alterations right through to, you know, multi-storey buildings, houses, factories, science buildings.
It must give you a good sense of achievement, I suppose is a good word, when you go around town and you see these buildings and the things that you've designed and built and, well, had you know, drawn the plans and things for. It must be quite satisfying to do that.
It is, and it's really rewarding, and one of the best aspects of my job is some of the best friends I have started off as clients. And it's a very personal thing when you work with people and talk with them and learn all their little foibles and things, and then you design something that meets them and when they appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's really rewarding. And one of the most rewarding experiences was I did a house for a lady who was at Massey University, and she didn't have a big budget, and I was able to do something which was very close to her budget. She was so grateful that she would bring me every Christmas a Gugelhopf cake for about 5 years, which is rather nice.
Gugelhopf.
I think it's Gugelhopf, is it?
Yeah, I know the ones you mean. Yes,
you know the one.
Yeah,
they're
lovely, beautiful.
Some of those type of rich fruit cake.
Yes, I think they come from
it's sort of a marbled, like a Madeira.
Yeah, covered with fruit and nuts and things on the top. Is that the one?
I haven't had one for a while. I've forgotten. That's rewarding, and when you see other clients who keep saying every time, "Oh, we're still enjoying our house," it's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the variety of workers have done prisons, kindergartens, schools, churches.
Big variety,
Poultry quarantine buildings for both small poultry and ostriches. Fire stations all over the Lower North Island.
Oh, goodness.
Insurance buildings.
Wow.
I helped on the police station, done museums, art galleries, libraries. I doubled the size of the Massey Library, which would have been in your time.
So you were working not just in the Palmerston North, but
Lower North Island. Or the Wellington office looked after, obviously, the Wellington area, but from certainly Palmerston North through to Taranaki, Hawke's Bay. Fire stations, developed some standard fire stations which have been used in the South Island and even Auckland, as well as I think one in Whakapapa ski field.
Were there ever times when you thought, gee, I think I wish I'd done something else rather than like, I think we all from time to time think that, don't we? But did you ever think,
yes, particularly when you're under some sort of pressure and stress to get things done.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's difficult when you have a contract where it's not going well, but not your fault particularly, but you feel obliged to get on top of it and try and get people to actually do what they should do, because the building industry is fraught with people not meeting their obligations. But not often. I mean, it's been rewarding.
Yeah.
In terms, not so much financially, but just rewarding and the variety of work.
There was a number of the big construction companies went broke, didn't they? And sort of 20-odd years ago, 20, 30 years ago.
Yes, they did. And again, one of the things, for instance, we were doing a fire station up in southern Taranaki, and the contractor went broke. And the Ministry of Works at that time oversaw any government work. So while we were doing the fire station as a private firm, when the tenders came in, I recommended that the second lowest tender be accepted, because I had some questions about the lowest tenderer. But the Ministry of Works insisted that we had to take the lowest tenderer. They ignored my advice. Lo and behold, that contractor went broke. And when it came to sorting it out, the Ministry of Works weren't interested at all, and it was left over to us. So my senior partner in Wellington, who's a very capable man, came up with what he said: well, we'll become the main contractors, so all payments will be made to us, and then we'll pay the subcontractors. And in those days, I'm not sure I should be saying this, but when any equipment was fixed in a building, that was it. It had to stay there. We had a quiet word to the electrician and the plumber to actually remove what they could reasonably, because they had not been paid for it. And these were people living in a small town. It was actually parterre. They were small contractors who had families and things.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
They were being suffering from the incompetence of a very gung-ho contractor.
And that's
in the end, the funny thing about that was we also had to pay a bond, which was in actual real money or terms with the bank or whatever. So when he went bankrupt, the idea was the bond would be used to make sure the client, the person who's paying for the building, had some recompense. The interesting thing was the official assignee took over that bond, and it wasn't used for that job. It was used for to settle the debts of that particular builder for any other job. So a lot of the jobs he had would have no bond. But here was the money that was meant to secure this one.
It's pretty awful, isn't it?
Mm. The irony of all this is that by the time we'd finished and wrapped up the job, it actually cost the client less than the original contract price. And all the subcontractors got paid. So, now that was rewarding to do that, to be able but at the time it was quite stressful.
So how much of your work was sort of, lots of people might think architecture is a matter of designing buildings and so on, but you're saying there's a lot of supervision and oversight and monitoring and so on.
Absolutely.
What sort of split is there?
It is. I'm not quite sure how to describe that, but we were talking earlier about how a contract runs. A typical job of the architect is one, is to secure a client, talk to the client, determine a brief, design to the brief. When you've got something the client's happy with, you then get estimates of the cost. When that's all as it hopefully should be, you then proceed to do working drawings, get the building consent, call tenders, negotiate with people on prices if there are some that are up or over, and then you start the building work, and the architect will supervise the work. Supervise is not quite the word. It's been carefully changed to be observation of the works, because some people took supervision to mean literally that you're there watching them do everything. No, you're not. You're there keeping a general observance of the works and making sure things are done according to your drawings and how they should be. Then they make claims for payment, and you go through and check the payments. If you haven't got a quantity surveyor involved, you check the payment. Then you issue a certificate for payment to the building owner, who is obliged, once you've issued that, it becomes binding on him. He pays the contractor the sum, and we also hold back some money. There's held retention monies, so that the contractor, when he claims X number of dollars, gets paid X minus Y dollars. The Y dollars is held by the owner of the building, so that at the end, and you go through a series of claims for the length of the contract. When the job is finished, the bulk of the money retained, if everything is satisfactory, is paid to the contractor, so he now has all his money. Still a little bit left, because we have a period which is called the maintenance period, which is a term of time depending on the size of the contract, but typically for a house, 3 months. So the owner, in moving in, has time to find out that which doors jam and if he's got any leaks or whatever issues. And he then issue what's called a completion list for the contract to come and fix up any minor problems. He then have a final inspection, and everyone's happy he's released that final amount of money. Now, it's interesting that, because in the building boom, particularly in Wellington, you'd have people like jib stoppers were in short supply. So these people would go in to a major contract and do all the jib stopping, and then they'd go and they wouldn't come back because they're on the next job getting all their money. They weren't concerned about a little bit of money being held on them because they could earn bigger money on the next contract.
Yes, I see.
So the first person then, or owner, would have the problem of getting anything that wasn't right sorted out. And that would apply to other trades as well. But the system wasn't always as fair as it seems to be, because you'd have somebody, the first person on site might be a piling contractor who does all his work, but the contract's actually 3 years long, so he didn't get his final money until the end of 3 years. So what would happen? He would inflate his price a bit to cover that. So no one wins then, because the price goes up.
Well, it's the interest on the money being held, so whoever's got it, right? Depends how much they inflate the price.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that held in trust, was it?
There's various ways of doing it, yes, in trust or...
Yeah.
It's simple contracts, it's usually just the building owner, but other bigger ones,
So do the architects have an overall supervisory body and complaints procedure and so on?
The Institute of Architects has that. So
and all architects have to be members of the...
No. No, you don't. The only compulsory thing is being a registered architect, which is with the New Zealand Registered Architects Board, which is an independent body.
Mm-hmm.
Members are appointed by the government and by the Institute of Architects too, obviously, and other interested parties, contractors, federation, people like that. And
they have a disciplinary procedure? Or?
Yes, they do.
Do you have to renew anything at any certain periods? Or
Yes. It's one gets registered after having completed a certain amount of time as a young architect. And then you have to... This is only in the last 15 so years. Complete what they call a CPD... Continuing Professional Development Program. You've got to acquire a certain number of points to maintain your registration. And that that's every 5 years that's checked.
Yes, it's pretty similar to a lot of professions like chartered accountants and lawyers.
So now you're semi-retired at least. Do you found it a satisfying career?
Yes, it has been a satisfying career. You mentioned earlier, Roger, about getting some satisfaction from seeing buildings. Yes, that's very much the case. But also, I've had the experience of having something you've built then demolished, which is an interesting experience too. In this case, it was a building which was existing, and we did an enormous amount of work in three stages over the building, renewing it all. And then, of course, the economic conditions change, as does time with certain institutions where people are not coming in the bottom end and therefore not going through. And so, in this case, the institution ran out of manpower to run it, plus the parameters of maintaining what they were doing changed and got harder.
You're being very cagey here. What sort of building is it? Can you say that?
I'm talking about Mercy Hospital.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you see. Yeah.
You see, it was run by the Sisters of Mercy, and weren't getting...
Yes. People
weren't joining the sisterhood.
Exactly.
And the nurses were getting older, and then your neighbour here, Southern Cross, came into town, and so there was competition.
Yes.
And then they, in the end, they merged.
Yes.
So obviously, Mercy Hospital became redundant.
Yeah. And buildings age as well, as needs change.
But we'd met that with the changes, you know. Mm. We built a brand new operating theatre, recovery suite, upgraded all the rooms, and interesting enough, many people preferred those rooms to the opposition hospitals that were. But then to see it demolished, that was a good 10 years of my life.
You think architecture is two things. Has architecture changed much during your working life? And two, if you were to start off now, would you still choose architecture?
I'd think a little harder about it now, because when I started, it was not as competitive in the sense that now clients and organisations are trying to demand more and more for less and paying less. And that is part of the cause of such things as the leaky building syndrome and all the building woes we have. Because you only get what you pay for, and this applies to services as well. And so many people have not got the service that they think they're entitled to, because they haven't been prepared to pay for that service. So now it's all, people are sort of reluctant to talk about jobs they're doing in case someone comes along and snatches that job from them somehow. Yeah. Whereas when I started, we all used to meet once a week somewhere for lunch, and we'd all talk about what we were doing with the opposition. You know,
anti-competitive practices, huh?
Not any. This was very very open.
Be more
helpful. Yeah, but
So I would
collaborating
think,
against the kind of Adam Smith would talk about business people getting together to see how they.
So I'd think twice about it now, and also too that the age of computerisation has changed it. I mean, I'm proud to say I got through my entire career without using a computer for any design work or drawing.
Yeah,
the only computer work I did was word processing.
But I guess you'd have to admit that some of these computer programs would do it in a fraction of the time now. That
you'd be surprised. No,
yeah, wouldn't.
Oh, no, okay. they take out the hard work. Mm. If you are doing a drawing and need to alter it, the old way was getting out a razor blade and scratching the ink off the tracing paper.
Oh, okay.
And then burnishing the paper again and redrawing it. Whereas now the computer just goes zip, zip.
Yeah. Burnishing the paper.
Right? It's to put a surface back on so that the ink will.
So how do you do that? Or how did you do that?
With hard physical labour.
You just rub it and
rub it with an abrasive rubber and keep rubbing it.
That's to get the ink off. Yeah. Or to give a surface again.
Both.
Okay.
You use a razor blade because the ink actually would sit on the face of the paper if you were able to look at it.
So it's not normal paper, tracing paper, it's sort of waxy type paper or something?
You could say it's waxy. So drawing was an art in itself, whereas the computer literally takes away the actual finesse and skill of drawing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Because it makes everybody theoretically equal, but it also masks, in many cases, the inability of some people.
Hmm. Yes, I see what you mean.
And I had a saying was that if there was a drawing on my drawing, if there was a line on my drawing, I put it there and I know why I put it there and what it is. Whereas I've seen drawings, computer drawings, where people, the operator who's produced that drawing, actually doesn't know what that line is.
Hmm. Are there design packages now, software packages that you...
You're talking to the wrong person to ask there, but yes, there are. Okay. You know, now, when people are actually drawing something, it's also drawing it in three dimension on the computer.
And
you can do fly through the building, whereas we were doing little thumbnail sketches, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So
and has that brought costs down, do you think?
I don't think so. Mm. I mean, take the extreme cases. A company here in Palmerston North who produces drawings, not architecture, I'm talking about engineering here, produces drawings for clients, but those drawings are all actually done offshore and emailed here. And when they're done offshore, sometimes there's a not exact comprehension, understanding at the other end. So you can get something coming back, which...
And there could be a whole bank of material that they can just download and tweak a bit. And
just about everybody now has a library of details. And that's both a good and a bad thing. The library of details is good in theory because those are the drawings done by the company that produces that product or whatever. But the people who are actually downloading them don't actually understand necessarily.
I think that's a widespread problem in my area as well, where you've got highly technical material, but you can use packages that do it, and you don't necessarily know what the packages are doing. So large numbers of people.
That's right.
And Dennis, do you think that plenty of younger people are still coming into your profession? Or
obviously, Roger, this, because when I went through, there was one school of architecture.
Right.
Now there are three.
Oh, right.
And that's part of, earlier we talked about employment, and I talked about the fact when I advertised for a young architect in Palmerston North, I'd get 20 applicants, all identical experience because they've all just qualified. Yeah. So, you know, now I imagine it's much the same. Yeah. There are just too many, possibly.
Yeah.
We now have, and this is an interesting point, we now have far more women architects than we ever did. And people have mixed views on that. It's quite interesting, really, because some say, okay, many of them will become mothers and what have you and not follow their career further. And some people say, with the competition for places, is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? It is an issue.
Yes, it's broad across all the professions.
I'm sure it is.
Certain standard positions now on that, which probably we won't go into, especially as we're out of time. But thank you very much for that.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.